You are listening to the Massive Report podcast.
Welcome to the Massive Report podcast here at Saucy Brew Works. Like and subscribe if you will. I don't like and subscribe to the Nashville loss of Saturday. We'll talk about that here in a few moments. But first, Sam, we're at Saucy, and you always I think you're going down the menu and checking everything off. What'd you have this week?
Today, I tried the Carolina pulled barbecue pork sandwich, and it was really good. It was really good, and it has this broccoli slaw on it.
Oh,
it was actually it was pretty impressive. So I recommend come and try the food.
I'm having the juicy ASAP. What do you have in there, Murph?
I have the stolen signs or whatever, the baseball one.
Yeah,
again,
you had that one last week. And Bart does not have a beer yet.
Not yet. This is important, though, Sam. So you said it was a Carolina-style barbecue. What kind of barbecue sauce was it? Vinegar-based or mustard?
I think it may have been vinegar-based.
There you go. That's what we like to hear.
All right. Well, it sounds delicious, and that's what we're getting at here. We're at Saucy Brew Works. Come down, have something to eat, have a nice beer. Or, you know, coffee. They have the full coffee bar. That's where we're set up.
You know what we haven't talked about this place?
What?
The swings that they've got out there.
Oh, yeah.
The swing seats. Yeah, mm-hmm. I think we should promote those a little bit more. That's a cool little feature.
That's good for someone like me. We can't do it during the podcast because I'm very fidgety. And I would be swinging constantly away from the mic, to the mic. But our point is...
One of those days we're just going to get headsets with the mic in them.
Yeah, so that doesn't matter. There you go. Saucy Brew Works here at Harrison West at 3rd Michigan. Come see us on a Monday or anytime. This is a great place to hang out. And we appreciate you hanging out with us virtually for the Mass Report Podcast. Before we get to the game, if we have to, Bart, I'm so glad you're here because you were in the middle of the celebration of Pipa. I know I missed last week, and you guys talked about his career and so forth, but I want to get your impressions of the celebration being there, because I watched it on TV. It's not the same thing. Give me some feels.
No, I mean, this was one of, if not the best environments I've felt at Lower.com Stadium or Lower.com Field. It was just so great to see Pipa again. Just the way they started it off, the way, you know, he has his kids out there taking penalties right before the games. A little bit of swagger there, too. Obviously, the highlights, to hear from him a little bit, to get the Higuain chant going again at the Nordeck. It kind of took a little bit, but people started picking up on it. And frankly, I wouldn't have minded it going on throughout the game. I also wouldn't have minded seeing Pipa come out later in that game.
Yeah, a little floater.
That wouldn't have been
late in the match, a little floater
all the chip highlights. It was absolutely
wonderful. That's what I had forgotten on TV. They ran that package. I'm like, wow, that's... I'd forgotten what touch he had.
You can't forget one of the most legendary goals ever scored, which was the Pipa bicycle in the wonderful Four Columbus kits.
Yes,
the Four Columbus kits are great kits. I will go to my grave that those were actually wonderful.
He did them proud.
Kits.
That was the best moment in the Four Columbus kit history.
Yeah,
there's no question.
We don't remember that season. It didn't happen. That season wasn't played, but the kits happened and they were great. No, I mean, it was just, this is a guy, I think it says something, and I'm sure guys all touched on it last week, but when you do kind of step back a little bit, as much as, you know, we all hold Guillermo rightfully so in a special place in our hearts, there's really no question that Federico Higuain is the greatest player to ever play for the Columbus Crew. To see that recognition, to see how much he, you know, loves and cares for the city, and to see that we are to a point with this team, this franchise, too, where Brian McBride isn't even in the conversation anymore. And I think
that
says a lot of where we've come from in terms of the skilled and talented players who love it and want to call this place home. I mean, there's a reason Federico Higuain, it wasn't just, you know, the gimmick. It's he genuinely cares about this place. You could see it. And you can tell everyone here just still absolutely loves him.
Well, and one of the things I thought, I think it was at halftime, they had former teammates of his come up on the screen and, you know, each kind of give their message. And Will Trapp and Ethan Finley and his brother, You know, there was a bunch of guys. I'm sure I'm forgetting people. But, and I know that you do that when a club asks you to do it, they do that. But, you know, I knew a lot of those guys when they were here, and they loved PIPA. I mean, sometimes you get a designated player who's a bigger name and making more money than everybody else, and it just it works on the field, but maybe not as well in the locker room. That was not the case with PIPA, not at all. And, you know, I think you could see that just in everything that happened on Saturday. I didn't make it over to the celebration beforehand where he signed the contract and stuff, but I heard that that was really cool. He took or signed autographs longer than people expected him to. They even tried to stop the line at one point, and he continued to sign a few more people and stuff like that. So, great guy. We talked last week just about once he learned to speak English and was comfortable just talking. I mean, not even interviews, but just talking as he walked off the field and things like that. You start to get to know him, and he was able to do more fan stuff like this. You know, I think it made the community embrace him even more when he could communicate with them and things like that. And, you know, it was very cool to see him back.
Well, this was his experience in this country, his first experience, and language is a part of it. And to have a community wrap their arms around you and bring you along with them as a new American, that's got to mean a lot to him as well. I know, you know, my daughter was doing student teaching for Ohio State in New Albany schools. It's texting me, oh, my God, Peepa's here picking up his kids, you know. It was like, everybody knows this guy. He's such a part of the community. And even though he's still down in Miami coaching their number two team, I feel like at some point, Bart, we're going to bring him back in some role, right?
I mean, you've got to. You got to find, you know, the right fit for him. This is, all due respect to Frankie Hayduk, Peepa's not going to be a mascot for this franchise. They've got to find, you know, that right role for him. And if coaching is something that he does want to do kind of long term, and I think, you know, there's always kind of the difficulty, especially when you have exceptionally talented players like that, that they just have, you know, that vision that not every other player is blessed with. And sometimes trying to communicate and that when you've got that sort of vision, it doesn't really translate as a coach. I don't have any personal insight into this, but tend to believe just with the way that Federico Higuain is, that's one of those players where it could translate. The way he just seemed to uplift and get the most out of all these other players. I mean, Tom Costello, credit to him, did some great research and trivia last week about PIPA and found, you know, the two players with six assists from him and for the life of me, now I'm forgetting one of them, but I know one of them was Josh Williams, and that's one of those guys where, again, you're bringing the best out of it. Six of the guys' nine career goals come off the boot of Federico Higuain. That's one of those guys that makes players around him better, and I think he can do that, you know, from a coaching standpoint. I'd love to see him get the opportunity. Maybe it starts with Crew, too.
The other was Giassi.
Yeah.
For the record.
Yeah, I loved in the highlight package, and we'll put a bow on this, but when I'm watching on TV, he scores one of those chip goals, and Will Trapp is behind the play, and the ball goes in, and Will Trapp just puts his arms out like, what? You know, just like a fan, you know? It was such a beautiful moment, you know? He was like, what did I just see? That was amazing, you know?
That or the Pachinko, just like, I mean, how that must have broken, and Lucas Zellerion has had, you know, plenty of swaggy, wonderful goals, too. But yet to see anything quite like some of those PIPA chips. And I don't know that we ever will know that
they're
we
like
should
balloons.
Expect it from
it. They defy gravity.
Yeah.
It's like, how did that get it should have just continued to float out of the stadium, you know?
One of the things, and we've talked about it before, but this reaffirmed it to me on Saturday, was they need to fix these Circle of Honor rules, because this shouldn't be, regardless of whether he comes back as a coach or whatever PIPA ends up doing, this should not be the last time he's honored at that stadium.
Exactly. Hey, here's an idea. How about we don't have a set of arcane rules that mean nothing? Let's just decide, hey, this guy is one of the pillars of the franchise. He's important to all of us.
Mm-hmm.
Put him on the Ring of Honor.
Yeah.
You know, you see, like, the iconic sports franchises in sports, like, you know, the Dallas Cowboys or whatever, the New York Yankees. do they have this kind of criteria? I think they just decide that this guy is going
to
go up.
Yeah, and I think you have to be careful to some degree to just not start putting guys in left and right.
I think they can get it right.
Yeah, right. Not that hard. I think there should be more fan involvement. I don't. You know, every fan has their favorite person and player and whatnot.
Have a vote or something.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Should be a part of it, not the whole thing, because I do think there needs to be some sort of, you know, non-emotional attachment to it. From, you know, not that people in the front office or coaches or whatever wouldn't have some of that, but I do think that the fans should be involved to some degree, you know, maybe helping to nominate if you get X amount of percent of vote. I don't know, but I think that could be a thing they should do.
Let fans do like baseball Hall of Fame ballots. Get the fans the ballot. You know, after a certain amount of years, players become eligible, and if they meet X criteria, change the criteria that we've got now. To let fans vote on it. If you get enough, then they can do it. And if, you know, there are ways to do it.
It's pretty easy. Do you want to walk into the stadium and see his name and see his number on the Ring of Water? Yes or no?
And there are no stakes. You don't lose that. It's not like
it's end of the world.
It's not like the number 10 is not going to be able to be worn. You're not retiring numbers. You're just putting a name on a plaque and getting great content for an afternoon.
Now, I'm a sentimental person, so when Josh Williams retires, I want him up there.
100%.
You're not going to
retire that number.
Yeah, I was going to say, are you expecting an argument don't do it?
Just put him up there. You know, that's me. I'm very sentimental about these things. I don't need to crunch the numbers and this happened and that happened. I mean, it's a team
sport. It's about
sport.
How it made you feel. It's about how the player made you feel.
I do hope at some point, though, they figure out how to get that inside the stadium versus it being outside the stadium in the supporter quarter.
The one thing I will say, because I do think there should be something in the stadium, but I do like that you can just, not that people are walking by that stadium, there's not enough down there right now. But if you do, you can just walk up to it and see it on a Tuesday if you happen to be down in, you know.
Well, that's a good
idea. But hold on. Even looking through the gates, you can pretty much see almost that entire stadium from one point or the other.
But I think you could have it both ways where you could put something up like they
did
at Gold Stadium.
I don't think they should take the other one down.
Oh, yeah. I
don't think they should take the other one down. I just think that because that has
Betty's
more detailed history of why.
It'd be wonderful right up there next to the Fong Thursday side.
All right. Well. It was a beautiful tribute to Pipa, and hopefully we'll get it all right and put him in the Ring of Honor. 1-0, Nashville beat the Crew. We've been debating, as any follower of this team has this year, Jossie versus Miguel. And maybe the answer at this point is neither. And that sounds kind of mean, but when you step back and take the 1,000-yard view, neither one of them is producing. Jossie gets his first start forever on Saturday. Am I missing something here? Did we see anything that gives us hope in the short term for either one? I think long term it's going to sort of work itself out. Mm-hmm. But right now I'm not seeing a lot that I like.
Yeah, I think I still think Jossie gives you more right now overall. And just overall play, I thought – in the games he's played, he's been more dangerous. But forwards are out there to score goals, and neither of them are doing that. You know, their two goals came in the first two games. Jossie's had the better chances since then, but he hasn't converted. And Saturday, you know, you were going to need somebody to step up and put the ball in the net against a really good defensive team. I went back and looked before we started, and, you know, the Crew have beaten Nashville 2-0 twice. But one of those was the playoff game where they scored two goals in extra time.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So it's always been – there was a 1-1 draw and a 1-0 game before this past weekend. I think there was a 0-0 game in there too. But, you know, so you've needed guys to step up. Ironically, it's been Jossie and Pedro Santos, I think, have two goals apiece against them, and Lucas has one. So you needed a forward or an attacking player to step up. You have Lucas coming off of the injury. You know, I don't know how –
he didn't look good.
He didn't look himself. But when they need to be able to play without him, and you know that was true against the Red Bulls, and they were able to grab that late goal. And I thought watching this game, like, all right, somebody's going to do something. I also thought Caleb Porter went to Miguel too early. I know it was the 60th minute, and that's a normal thing, but I thought Jossie was doing some things where that was causing some issues, and maybe he's not the one that scores, but maybe he's a part of the play. But, yeah, I mean, one of these guys has to get going, and I think if you're Caleb Porter – unless Miguel's doing something in practice that shows he should have the job back. I think you got to roll with Giassi here for a few games, just like you did with Miguel to start, mm-hmm. to kind of get into a rhythm. You know, if Giassi is playing 70, 80 minutes regularly, he probably scores one of those goals that he's had the opportunity to, as opposed to coming off the bench. But yeah, I think that's going to be a problem. I mean, the team had, what, 7 goals in the first 2 games and has 3 since then?
Yeah.
Yeah, 3, because 2 against Toronto, 1 against the Red Bulls. So, you know, you can't rely on Derek Etienne to get you 10 goals, despite how quickly he started. And Lucas isn't always going to be able to do something magical.
And here we are, and they talked about this on the telecast, that the way Nashville plays with that ironclad, disciplined, low block, they got the early goal. That's right. They have you. You know, it's like they have you in their trap. You know, their bear trap.
Yeah.
We've got you now. And so Yaya Boah is coming back from World Cup qualifying. He didn't play, but, you know, that's a long trip. I get why he doesn't start. Diaz starts. Etienne comes off for Yeboah. Diaz stays on the pitch, and they were questioning that decision because Diaz does not at all play well when he's asked to do anything to break down anybody. Am I right, Bart?
Yeah.
I mean, he's your long bomb guy. Just run out and catch the ball.
I mean, in Lucho's defense, I don't think anyone did a good job breaking anything.
No,
I mean, you had 19 shots.
I'm not singling him out so much as questioning why. Mm-hmm. I think you have a better chance if you leave Etienne on the field.
I think so, and I wouldn't have minded seeing, you know, Matan manages a shot in, I think, what, 12 minutes on, although it looked like he might have picked up something there toward the end. That might have just been, you know, frustration afterwards. But, yeah, Lucho, I mean, wasn't doing anything for it. I think Derek Etienne is maybe coming back down to earth a little bit more, regressing to the mean. That's not to say that he's – and right now, you know, you need to see a lot more from anybody to displace Derek Etienne. And that was surprising to kind of see him come off, you know, unless it was that, you know, I thought there might be a preference for Yeboah on that side. But I still think it comes back to the strikers, and that you can, between the two of them, manage one shot, nothing on target of those 19 shots the crew had. And the one shot came from Miguel Berry, and I don't necessarily disagree that, you know, Giassi probably passed the eye test better. Lord knows Miguel really whiffed on that clear from or that cross from Moreira. But I guess it just – for me, it comes back to coaching. And like, this is – you know, this is their game plan. They aren't new kids on the block. You've played them. Everyone and their mother knew what they were going to try to do. And, you know, to Caleb's credit, you did see some adjustments. You saw at the start of the second half, I mean, for the kickoff, everybody pushed all the way up there. I mean, it looked like he was going for it, and they had some chances, but it didn't even look like they were getting strong goalkeeping from Joe Willis, you know, Nashville. So I was just frustrated. I just, you know, surrender Cobra by the end of it because he just – I don't know what to say.
And Walker Zimmerman does not start the match because he had spent so many minutes on the pitch with the U.S. men, which we'll get to a little bit later, qualifying for the World Cup. I have such respect for him as a player, and for him and, ironically, Godoy to both come on late because they had been so busy. And I thought, well, Zimmerman's not starting. This gives us a chance to break them down, and we really showed no ability to do that.
Look, this team, this is what they do, like Bart said. You know, the previous games the crew has played against them have been these slugfest games, and the crew's come out on top more often than not. They've found ways to score. They just couldn't do it. I mean, this team opened the season at Seattle and came away with a 1-0 win. Now, they scored later in that game, but it was a similar type of game. They just frustrated the Sounders. They didn't have – you know, I rewatched that game before this one, and you know, they're talking about it's the Seattle broadcast, and they're talking about how, you know, those guys aren't getting going. And granted, it's the first game of the season, not the fourth or fifth or whatever this was. But this is just what Nashville does. And you know, I think, you know, you have every right to leave that game frustrated because it was just a frustrating to watch, frustrating result, all that. But I don't think a lot of teams are able to defend the way Nashville does. Teams will sit back on the Crew. I think that'll happen a lot when you play at lower.com field. But I just don't know if you'll see a team be able to hold the Crew the way. I mean, you know, you look at what the Red Bulls did, another really good defensive team. I think they were the best defensive team in the league last year. The Crew found a way eventually to break through. And so while I do think there's some questions to be asked about this offense if Lucas Zellerion isn't banging home goals from the top of the box or getting the free kick. You know, he had a good free kick out, but it went just wide.
Close.
But I think, you know, especially if you can get a forward who's playing consistently and get him scoring, I'm not worried about this yet. You know, it's unfortunate to lose at home. I think this team has probably dropped too many points already this year because of some mistakes. And, you know, if you want to look at Nashville's goal, I mean, Pedro Santos kind of steps in a little too far, misjudges the cross a little, tries to come back and slips. And I wrote today in our What We Learned that, you know, that's going to happen. You're going to have guys fall down. But there's been a number of this was the first goal that wasn't a set piece, but it's still a similar type of just little mistake that cost the team. And teams have taken advantage. Now, will things revert to the mean and teams, you know, stop capitalizing on nearly every mistake the Crew makes? Probably. But you've got to show that you can score some goals, you know, regardless of how good the team is defensively.
And ironically, and they were talking about this on the telecast as well, that if Nashville has a weakness, it's on set defending set pieces, and we couldn't take advantage of that. So frustrating. The best news of all, they're in the Western Conference, and I'm glad about that. They're
I
just hard
about
to play.
That. Yeah, they got
they're just hard
over.
To play against. We're not going to see them very often, and I'm fine with that. I have tremendous respect for them. They've been on the road for the whole season. Their new park opens the first part of May. It's going to have
Games on the field.
I don't know if you saw this or not. Their capacity is going to be 30,000.
Yeah.
Wow. Hey, where is that new park located?
I think it's down. It's out
the
of the fairgrounds.
Oh.
The Tennessee State Fairgrounds.
Is that the urban core?
Is that their second downtown?
yeah, the second
downtown. Yeah, Nashville's second downtown.
Yeah, it's not on Broadway.
God bless them. Whatever. We don't have to face them again, I assume, for a while. Unless, of course, we face them in MLS Cup. Why not? Mm-hmm. It could happen. All right. Do we want to get Bart watered up here a little bit at the bar before we talk about Philadelphia? You're going to need to drink before we talk about Philadelphia Union, because they present another colossal challenge for Columbus Crew, and we will talk about that right after Bart goes to the bar with me. We are back at the Mass Report podcast here at Saucy Brewworks with Bart, with Murph, with Sam. I'm Brian. We needed to take a break to get Bart to the bar because he was thirsty. What'd you get?
I got, and fitting after the game that we just broke down for the listeners, it's called the Painkiller.
Oh, good idea, because I got more pain coming to you, because we're going to talk about Philadelphia Union, who are tops in the East right now, and I was doing a little research, and we'll get to that here in a second, but I need to give you some good news first. Believe it or not, MLS Cup champions NYCFC and New England are both looking up at Cincinnati, 2 points below them, and I know we're early, but that's both those are rather shocking, with 4 points apiece.
That's sort of breaks my brain. I think I can understand it at an intellectual level, but
so it's not so bad. It's not so bad. We'll be fine. All right. They have some work to do, and I'm sure before all is said and done, they'll be looking down on Cincinnati.
I'm sure.
Let's be honest. Cincinnati might have played Miami like 3 times already or something. Who knows? Well,
Cincinnati has 2 losses in a row, right?
They lost 4-3. On Saturday.
Yeah,
they got a couple of wins in there.
I think they lost the game before that.
Yeah, Montreal's not very good either. You know who's good? The undefeated Philadelphia Union at Chester, Pennsylvania, for the Crew in Philadelphia, 6 p.m. on Saturday. And they're very impressive. I don't even know where to start with these guys. They've given up two goals in five games, and they have not surrendered one goal in a month.
Yeah, I mean, we just talked about how good Nashville was, how difficult it was for the Crew to break them down. Philly does it a different way. They're not just going to sit back and be content, especially this game is in Chester, but they're not going to give you anything easy. I mean, this is going to be another game where the Crew are going to need their offensive guys to do something. You know, you can't have a repeat performance of last Saturday. You've got to put the ball in the net or you're probably going home with nothing, because unlike Nashville, they will look to score. They've got 9 goals already this season, which is second, I believe, in the Western Conference or the Eastern Conference so far this year. So this is a team that's been building. I mean, under Jim Curtin the last few years, like you said about the teams you mentioned earlier, Brian, it's early, but I mean, this looks every bit like a Supporters Shield contending team.
Mm-hmm.
The Crew haven't had great luck in Philly in a while. I mean, last year they went there, they changed formation and pulled them apart, and it was an ugly game. Ugly, not like the last game, ugly, and the scoreline was ugly. So this is another tough one. I mean, that's what made, I think, this past game difficult to swallow, is you don't have an easy next game to kind of bounce back on. You know, this was, Nashville was supposed to be a game you're at home, that you get a win, and then you worry about Philly. And now you've got to worry about Philly coming on the back of your first loss.
I was reading up on our what do we call it, like sister broadcast, brother podcast, brother blog, brotherly report.
Love.
Yeah.
Brotherly game.
What is it?
Brotherly Game.
Yeah. Brotherlygame.com, which is a terrible name, by the way. But, their coverage was good. I was reading about how...
It should be Brotherly Match.
Jim Curtin, who is highly respected, smart guy, he's kind of changed tactically with the personnel that he has. He feels more confident in them attacking. They're pushing up more. And he said something interesting in this article. He said, I want the other team to make some of the passes that I need to get a goal for us. And I thought that was really interesting. Mm-hmm. And, of course, what he means is that we're pushing up, we're putting pressure on the ball in your third, and we're looking for you to pass into a mistake. And that gives the Crew, I think, more opportunities than Nashville would have given us this past Saturday, even down in Nashville. But it's going to be a high-stakes game. You know, I could see us giving up a really stupid goal very early because of this.
Yeah, well, they're not the Red Bulls in the way that, especially the Red Bulls of a few years ago, where they really press and whatnot, but they've certainly taken some of that idea of turn you over in a bad spot and capitalize on it. And, you know, you watched the Crew against the Red Bulls, and not that they were bad. They handled that actually pretty well, played a bit more direct and things like that, but it's just hard to, it's not something you play against every week, so it's difficult. And, you know, Philly has guys that can take advantage of it for sure. Like I said, this is not an easy road trip. Not that any road trip is easy for the Crew, but I don't know. I don't feel good about it.
Their goalie, Andre Blake, has been tremendous, even though you can't find him on the MLS website.
Right? Really?
Yeah. The stats department apparently does not like Andre.
He doesn't exist, which is ridiculous. He's one of the best goalies
in the
league.
Okay, let's see. Now I've got to investigate.
2 goals in 5 games. Another thing that I read that I thought was interesting in this article was they were talking about how they're playing a diamond shape in the midfield, and they really want to push you to one side of the field or the other and to eliminate switches, to really shrink the field vertically in half and trap you there as well. So that they're really looking to turn the field into like half the field, I was never good at geometry, but if you work it all out, they're squishing you one side and squishing you the other.
And that's what's concerning, because when you look at these first couple games of the season, and when the Crew really were clicking, they were using that whole field. They were switching, regularly, taking advantage with whether it was with the outside backs or whether it was with the wingers. They were moving left to right, making teams move horizontally. And I think you really want to avoid doing that. But, Their midfield's a mid grinder, you know, a meat grinder. You've got Alejandro Bedoya, just that guy does not seem to age. I think he's got a couple of goals on the season.
He says, Bedoya said, our number eight has to run the whole game. Whoever's playing that spot has to run the whole game. And that's the key to us pushing you where we want you to go. It's Jim Curtin has sort of galaxy brained this whole thing out, I think, to focus almost on this season.
But he's been doing it for a while.
But it's like to get to the promised land, I feel like, you know, this is maybe, you know, if there's a team to beat in the East, maybe we already know who it is.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And what I think they've been able to do is really that they've been able to have this sustained success. And now, again, I mean, they won Supporters Shield last year, right?
New England won last year.
They've been in contention the last
few years. They won 2 years ago.
Yeah, 2 years ago.
The Crew didn't have to play them. Yeah.
But they've been up there, you know, for these past 3 years and doing it without – they've got designated players, but without like that big name guy who you just find
enough. Lost Aronson.
But he was their guy as a, you know, 18-year-old kid who's playing pretty well. But now they've got Glenn Danzig, who's their, you know, leading
Danzig.
Scorer.
Oh, sorry, Daniel Grosdyk.
Dan Grazak.
He's on the Hungarian national team. He is their leading scorer with 4 goals. I love that, Glenn Danzig. Very nice, very nice. Good call. That's what I'm going to call him for now on. Long story short, going on the road against these guys, never mind playing them at home right now, they have everything working. That back line is, like, those guys played together a while, I think.
Yeah.
It's going to be a really tough test, and it seems like, you know, the highlights that I was watching, that they're really drawing crowds now out there in, you know, industrial, random Chester,
Pennsylvania. Well, yeah, I mean, you start winning consistently. That helps.
Yeah.
I think you've seen that here in Columbus when the Crew have had – obviously, the new stadium has been a big thing, but when the Crew has been good consistently, all of a sudden, you know, the Nordex packed, the rest of the stadium starts to fill up throughout the course of the year, and – you know, if you put back-to-back-to-back winning seasons, people start to take notice, and that's what they've done. Yeah. But I think you're right. I think New England will get back up there. I think New York City will be in the mix. I think the Crew are going to be in the mix in the top of the East. But Philly's not going anywhere. And, you know, you get off to a good start. A lot of season left to be played, but that gets you some points in the bank. And, you know, we were talking about the Crew leaving points kind of on the board. Philly hasn't done that. Yeah. San Jose, I mean... San Jose, this past week, I think you had the opportunity. So
yeah. Well, to go on the road and get a point, I would be really pleased with that. I don't even see that happening, but I'll get to my pick here in a moment. All right, I'm going to you last, Bart, because you're always the most optimistic. Sam?
I'm just a little bit curious. I've heard, and I don't know, I haven't had a chance to watch them, but I've heard a lot about the kid Julian Carranza. He's, I think, young DP for them, 21 years old. I think he's got one of their goals. I don't know, Smurf, if you've been able to, you know, follow him too much. MLS is talking about him like he's Tati Castellanos, rekindled.
I think you just kind of pointed it out. If MLS is talking about a Philly player, that Philly player has to be good. I mean, it took Aronson a while to start to get recognition. He's a talent. I mean, they've done a good job. Dallas gets a lot of credit for their academy, but they've done a good job of developing young players and, you know, identifying like him talent to bring in and work to help improve them.
Anybody else we need to touch on with Philadelphia?
Yeah. The other Aaron, because we talked about, you know, Brendan being gone, but they've got Paxton, and he seems like he's, you know, I mean, he's 18 years old, but he looks like he's getting, you know, some good runs for Philly, and yeah, it's a good mix. I mean, it is. There's a lot to like about this team if you're a Philadelphia fan, if you're, you know, or a Chester fan, and if you're Jim Curtin, I think.
I think it's a very well-constructed team. You've seen it's got the longevity, but you've seen guys like Santos that have now kind of taken who are starting for this team, you know, those last 2 years who are now taking a back seat while they're getting replaced with those young players. And I think Crew are definitely going to have this is one of those games where you're looking at Caleb Porter and saying, okay, this is where you make your money here.
All right. Well, I ask you this. Is this where we go with we talked about it, where we go with Jossie and Miguel? I don't know.
Color me intrigued.
Well, and that's an interesting question. You know, Philly plays that 4-4-2 diamond that you alluded to most of the time. You know, I don't see them going with necessarily a 4-4-2, but do you try and, you know, match it to some degree, you know, maybe play that 4-3 in the back, 5 in the back, play a little bit more defensive, still put 2 up top, but use the outside backs to really counter and, you know, do what Nashville did a little bit and sit back. You know, I know that's not what the Crew want to do, but you go to Philly and get something on the road, I don't care what it looks like. I think that's a solid result. The 2-0 at home, I believe. And
well, that's really kind of swinging back to Nashville. That's really, I mean, we had to account for those two guys up top because they're so good the entire game, even though that's basically, they're like, look, this is all we're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
This is what it is right here. You have to account for these two guys. And after we gave up the goal, obviously we did, but still they were giving us –
oh, I mean, Hany Mukhtar nearly scored, you know, that other one, too.
Yeah, so, you know, maybe we flip the script and we do that. I don't know. It's going to be very interesting to see what Caleb Porter decides to do because, you know, you can't – I think we got on Greg Berhalter for being stubborn about how he would – well, we're just going to do what we do. I think if there's any match where we cannot do what we do, it's this one. I think we have to get very creative.
And you've seen, and we saw Caleb, granted, it's the preseason, but we saw him experimenting with those different formations. And, you know, I know there's an argument, obviously, to be made that, you know, it's early in the season. You want to get the points that you can get. And, you know, a road game against a Supporter Shield favorite is one where you'd be, you know, very happy playing with for a draw, you know, 0-0 or something like that. I would like to see him come out and attack this team because I look at it, this game is, I'd be, you know, okay with 1 point, but I don't think 1 point and 0 points are going to make that much of a difference in the grand scheme of it over the course of the season. I think 3 points getting off the snide after a couple disappointing performances and putting Philadelphia, you know, knocking them down a notch, I think that's something where you could really get a lot of momentum. Now, to want that and to produce it are two different things, but I'd like to see them go for this.
Taller.
Well, and one thing when you talk about changing formations and whatnot, you know, I think Caleb was pretty set on sticking with what was working. You saw obviously some changes in terms of the lineup this past weekend, but you lost your first game. All right. Now you don't have to just fall back on, okay, well, it's been working. Now you've got the opportunity to maybe show some of the other things you've done. And I think, you know, you look at the opponents the first few games of the season, aside from maybe going to Red Bull, those are opponents you probably think you can get something out of without having to show some of your hand. This is a game where maybe you do, you've kind of circled, not to use a Caleb Porter-ism, you circled this game as a, okay, this is where we may have to pull something different out. And, you know, let's see how Philly gets off and starts and if they're as good as we think they're going to be, and they have been. So it would not surprise me if they, you know, maybe not a completely different formation, but do something different.
I feel like this game will know in 10 minutes whether we're going to get anything out of it or not.
That's how it was. That game that I was referring to, I guess it was last year, where they just, you could just see the Crew weren't in it. Yeah. I mean, they tried to play 3 in the back, and it just didn't work. And, you know, I agree with you, Brian.
And they said on TV that Caleb, it was one training session last week, best training session of the year. almost like that's coach speak that means nothing.
Yeah. And yeah. I mean, oftentimes that does happen where you have a great training session and whatever reason mentally that doesn't carry over to the, you know, maybe guys are like, all right, we trained really well this week, and then they don't bring it, as opposed to maybe a week where the coach really got on them about some of their training, and so they come into game day like we've got to focus. But sometimes you do train really well in that turn. Yeah, it's just hard to tell.
Well,
the other thing is I think this is one of those games where and we've kind of, you know, talked about him and Jonathan Mensah. This is where you need Jonathan Mensah, your captain,
yes,
and your defense, because they need to be stalwart for you to get anything against them.
We haven't talked about that at all.
He needs to step up.
I felt like Milos looked pretty good on Saturday. I still feel like there's something weird about Jonathan that I can't get my hands around exactly what it is that's bugging me about his play so far this year. It's not.
It's just not
to,
a Jonathan Mensah level. Right. But not what
a
you
lot of
come
clearances are just sort of flying into the crowd, or they're not going far enough. We're not winning enough balls in the air. I feel like Milos made a step forward on Saturday. Mm-hmm. Pedro, other than the slip, looks good.
Yeah.
Steven
yeah.
looks good. I'm not overall too concerned about the back line.
No. Well, and I think those two fullbacks, especially if they do decide to go three or five in the back, however you want to look at that, are crucial. Caleb talked end of last week just about how with Pedro, you essentially have a number 10 playing on the left side at fullback. And then with Marrera, you've got, he didn't play number 10, but he was a winger early in his career. And he's creative. He can make a pass. We've seen that. And that could be something where, you know, if you can hold Philly, if you can play well defensively, take the game into the second half, kind of like what they did with New York, you know, those could be guys that could unlock something that maybe you don't expect completely, especially Marrera. You know, I think people are aware of what Pedro brings offensively. They're attacking him a lot because they don't trust him as a left back yet. But I think Marrera could, and Pedro too, if he gets the opportunity, could be kind of a difference maker, not just in this game, but going forward.
Well, I think we need to look to score early.
Yeah. That would,
and they haven't that's done, a no-duh statement. You know.
Since the first game of the
or
year.
Or just score, period.
Yeah, that's a good idea, Sam. I'm stating the obvious here. That's my job, I guess. Well, I think we've broken down our fear of Philadelphia. I think we've all dealt with it. Mm-hmm. And we feel good about confronting that on Saturday. We don't have to play in the game, so that's cool. It's going to be tough. Let's make our picks. And then we have a few other things to get to, and then we'll wrap it up. Sam.
This has all the makings of a 0-0 tie.
Really?
And okay. I couldn't care less how the 1 point comes up, whether it's 0-0 or 5-5. But
5-5,
I think
that would be a Bart pick.
I think they would get a point on the road, regardless of how it comes, is a good thing.
All right, Murph?
I sadly feel like this is like a 2-1 loss. Like, I just, you know, if they'd shown me something on this past Saturday against Nashville, you broke Nashville down, you were creative, you know, maybe Lucas Del Rey on another week to get that knee right. You never know what he can bring. I mean, he could score the free kick that makes the difference or have that shot like he did against Toronto. But, you know, I just, coming off that game, I don't feel good about it. We all know the crew on the road under Caleb Porter. I need to see you win a road game before I start predicting road wins. And going against the top team in the East, one of the top teams in the league, I don't feel like they get anything out of this one.
I feel as bad about this upcoming matchup as I have in a long time, Bart. I'm saying we lose 2-0. I'm sorry.
I feel as bad about this one as I've felt in a long time, too, and so I'm going with a 3-1 crew win.
Wow. 3-1 crew win.
All right. There you go.
Josh Williams hat trick?
That would be nice.
Well,
I think
that's a good question. Before we move on to a couple other things we want to get to, are we going to see him pretty soon, Murph, Josh?
I think it's just a matter of, at this point, I think he was questionable for this game. I think that was the official designation. So it's just now it's a matter of fitness and when Caleb Porter decides to use him. As you mentioned, I thought Milos was really good, and I've been a critical of him.
Mm-hmm.
But if you go to three in the back, he's that third.
Yeah.
I mean, You know, I think Jahlil Anibaba can give you something, but I don't know at this point in his career if you're going to consistently go to him. Not that Josh is that much younger, but Josh has shown he can.
You know what you're getting.
Yeah. And as we've talked about on this, I think Josh just brings something different just from a
X factor.
Give a blank about this team, you just know? Like, he's just different. He's, yeah. You know, so I would like to see Josh get in there, but you're not taking Jonathan off the field, even if he hasn't been years ago.
No, you're not.
With Milos playing well, you know, I don't think.
And he paid for Milos. You need to see him on the field.
So,
well, it's. I think you've hit on something that, you know, his spirit, his soul on the field, Josh Williams. Maybe that's what it is, bud.
You will never find me arguing to keep Josh Williams out of the starting 11. That's all I'll say.
We just love him so much. We should rename this podcast the Josh Williams Show. All right, so we've made our picks. Let's talk about the World Cup.
Yeah,
the draw the other day. Was interesting.
Well, first of all, they're in. I think that's important. In case anyone missed that.
And people are still freaking out. Well, we only finished third. I'm like, what?
That was
come on.
Somebody and someone tweeted it. It's full credit to them, but that, you know, it's the joke was that you know, people say that Greg Berhalter after the night after they qualified is a divisive head coach, but you look at what he just did there. And for all the normal U.S. soccer fans, he made them happy because he qualified for the World Cup. And for all the really just brain-poisoned people, fanboys on Twitter, he made them happy because he lost the game. And so they had something to complain about.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, well, complaining is our national pastime now. It really is. It really is. And I need to spend less time on Twitter because it's soul-killing. You know. And was that a fun game to watch? No, it was not. And I knew that, because I have all the respect in the world for Costa Rica, I knew what they would do.
Oh, yeah.
I knew that they would just come out and try to entertain their supporters, and the atmosphere was great. You know, they're great people, and they love their country and their team. They still have a chance to get in.
Yeah, and they had a chance to get in the playoff.
I hope that they do, you know. That 0-0 draw in Mexico was
huge.
Everything. And to go down to that place and get a result, not a lot of U.S. national team coaches can, you know, hang that pelt on the wall.
Not to mention three wins against Mexico last year.
Right. I mean, it's, to me, Mexico has way more problems than we do. And that's been the case for the last several years now.
Yeah. Well, and I heard some guys debating, talking World Cup about, you know, does Mexico get out of their group? I think most people look at, well, you know, the U.S.'s group and are pretty confident that the Americans will get it. It's not the easiest group in the world, but there's a clear path to getting out.
Well, and we don't know the whole group.
True. But Mexico,
who are the teams that can qualify?
Wales, Scotland, and the Ukraine. And I think if you're looking at that purely from who the casual fan in Qatar is going to be behind, I don't think you want to see anything Ukraine right now, you know, given everything that's going on.
But it would be beautiful.
It would be great to see. I just wish they weren't in this group. But, you know, it'd be cool to watch them play in the World Cup in another group. I don't know if they're – I don't know how they're going to – they're supposed to play Scotland in this playoff game in June. I don't know if that's even going to happen.
It's so up in the air right now. There's so many geopolitical things going on. I would think that if we – throw all that out and just look at the countries, what do we see? To me, I don't know a lot about Ukraine's program, but to me, Wales is probably the toughest. Am I wrong?
I mean, you've got a game changer in Gareth Bale.
Yeah.
In a World Cup game, one game, he can make a difference. You know, he's older now, but, I mean, he still can do some special things. You know, he can take a free kick and put it in the back of the net. He can make a run that's the difference. You know, you look at Scotland and the Ukraine, and there isn't a name like that that jumps off the page. And so,
Ryan Fraser, thank you, Newcastle.
I was going to say, other than Bart's Newcastle guy. But look at
this scenario, though. And we complained about the World Cup being moved to November. Black Friday, USA and England.
The day before Ohio State, Michigan, which I was very happy given what I do for a living.
That's mind-blowing.
That was not on the Michigan game day.
It's never going to happen again.
And it's going to, I mean, a couple people are talking about it, and it's probably going to be the most watched USA World Cup game or U.S. soccer game ever, you know, until and unless they advance past this. I mean, what else is there to do, you know, unless you're one of those. I never go Black Friday shopping, so I will absolutely be glued to the
TV. So much pressure on England. Because you remember the goal going between the wickets.
Oh, yes. Oh, God, yeah. Well, and then on top of Euros this year, and Italy couldn't even bother to qualify for the World Cup, and you still lost to them.
And England has not apparently learned from 2010. The papers, the tabloids, whatever in England, were already referencing, you know, England's easy path through to the next round and things like that. And, you know, I think it will be interesting to see from an English perspective what it's like in the build-up there, because, you know, in theory, England should win this group, right? They've been to a World Cup semifinal recently. They've been to the Euro finals, as Bart alluded to. But, you know, I'm a Manchester United fan. If I'm that young U.S. attacking group, that Christian Pulisic and those guys, I'd be okay going up against Harry Maguire right now. Like, he hasn't been great for United, and he's been better for England. You know, obviously you've got to deal with a guy like Harry Kane and their attacking options as well, but the U.S. has been pretty good defensively. And that's just one of the games.
And the side we're not talking about is Iran. What do we know about them? I remember...
They qualified.
I remember 1998. You young men are too young to remember that. It was so disappointing. So disappointing. We went 0-3 and out. And one of the teams we played was Iran.
Yeah. Iran, I believe, is 21st in the world.
Yeah,
which
see?
Is hard. I don't know if it's true. I heard this on the radio that if you add up the FIFA world rankings, and take that for what it is, if you add them up of all the teams and all the groups, regardless of who makes it out of the playoff teams, Wales, Scotland, or Ukraine, this will be, based on that, the lowest number, so the hardest group based on FIFA world rankings.
Well, now, this is the group of death, then.
I don't know if I would go that. I think there are other ones, but, you know.
What, Group B, right? The one with the Axis powers?
No, this is Group B.
No, what's the one with
Germany, Japan,
and Spain?
yeah, I saw something. I saw
that's
something on Twitter that was like, don't ask this group about what they were doing between like this year and this year.
Yeah, I saw that too. Yeah. I don't know. You know, just at first look, I think that it's hard to handicap this World Cup coming out of group stage.
It's probably one of the most evenly drawn.
Yeah.
Like, you only have one group that looks easy, and you have one group that looks really difficult. Everything else is pretty balanced.
What's easy in your mind? What's difficult?
I have to go back and look at the groups. I think the U.S. group is definitely manageable. Yeah. I think it's actually more balanced than... But it doesn't look impossible like the year they got drawn with Germany, Portugal, and somebody else.
Ghana, right?
Yeah.
Well, that was a team you were hoping to avoid. I will say this, and I tweeted this right after the draw. Greg Berhalter not knowing one of those opponents, knowing Greg the way I do and how just tactical, and I'm sure he's already planning things and watching stuff, but to have to think about these three teams in one game instead of having all the teams ready to go.
Driving him nuts.
Absolutely. Like, and I think, is that the first game? I think they play.
Yeah.
And because they're in Group B, and Greg brought this up on some interview, they're in Group B, they play on the first day.
Yeah.
So the European guys will have a week off. They'll have a week from the end of the seasons over there to get there. So I think we talked last week while you guys weren't here that, you know, the U.S. will get time to train together, the first time they've really had to do that and work on Greg's system and stuff like that. No, they won't, because you're early enough in the tournament that with the way the schedule is, you've got a week to be ready.
And MLS, the season is ending, and he has MLS players on his roster. Does that affect his – let's say Nashville makes a run in the playoffs and Walker Zimmerman is such an important – piece to what they want to do.
That is one of those where I think that's going to come down to Don Garber. What does he tell, you know, that what does the league sort of impose or
well,
say?
I trust Walker Zimmerman to be ready to play regardless. But, you know, it just, he has challenges. Well, this is, we've never seen this.
Yeah.
We're playing the World Cup in November and December. It's never been done before,
maybe,
to my knowledge.
Don't just take all the money in a brown blood money
right,
in
right.
a brown paper
oh,
bag
yeah.
to
I mean,
you know, have it in
believe
Qatar.
Believe me. This cannot ever happen again, ever.
Well, and I mean, how do the European players deal with starting a season, taking a break, and obviously they
it's
know
a
they
long
have to
break?
Yeah, and they have to go back to their club teams. You know, MLS has done this obviously with the break that they've taken and whatnot. So it's different for those guys figuring out, you know, how to manage themselves. I mean, obviously you want to win a World Cup, but, you know, say England loses that first game just by chance. Does that change any approach? I mean,
yeah.
not of the team as a whole, but are some of the guys on that team that know, okay, well, now our chances of getting out of the group are less. But, you know, the guys that play for City and Liverpool, guys that will be contending for bigger and better things if they don't make it out of the group. You know, I don't think so, but that's something that these countries have never dealt with before.
Here's another problem we've never dealt with. Awkward family conversations during the Thanksgiving holiday about, okay, we're not watching NFL, and I love NFL. Mm-hmm. We're watching the World Cup now. We're not watching college football now.
Yeah.
We're watching the World Cup.
Yeah, you don't need to watch the Lions and the Bears or the Cowboys. You really don't.
No. You know, this could cause awkwardness for how
make sure you have an extra charger for your
phone. If you say, hey, would you guys like to watch the football game? And then you put that on. They're not, I mean, they're just going to hate you for calling it football.
Bart has a point.
We'll figure it all out. That's why we have multiple flat screens in our homes now.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
And devices, iPads, iPhones,
yes,
Android
phones.
It'll
all work out. Real quick, this Saturday, while the crew are fighting for their lives in Philadelphia, we have the U.S. women. God love them. You talk about World Cup perennial champions. They have a friendly with Azerbaijan on Saturday. At
Uzbekistan.
One of the stands. forgive me. At lower.com. And, you know, there's so much going on. We haven't even talked about that.
This is one of those where it's, I hope that the Uzbek Soccer Federation is getting a big old check.
Is this college?
This
is what it
it's
going to
be a bloodbath.
Ohio State, Youngstown State.
Yep.
Is
yes.
that what this is?
But so here's the situation, and we reported this when they first announced the game. The U.S. had a high ranking Asian team scheduled, and I believe I've heard it was Japan. And
oh, that
so
would have been good.
Here's the issue: those players when they go back. Still have to quarantine because of COVID to go to their leagues, and it was going to just be too much of a hassle. This is a friendly, and let's be frank here. When people go out to see the U.S. women's national team, it's not like some of the U.S. men's national team friendlies where you may be going to see, you know, someone on the other team play if they play a Sweden and Zlatan's play, you know, something like that. Everybody who's going to see the women play are more or less going to see the Americans. And, you know, it's a friendly, so we'll see what the lineups look like. But, you know, I think they knew that going in.
Let me ask this. I'm a proud alum of Washington State University. Trinity Rodman was a freshman recruit at Wazoo. Never played a minute for Wazoo because of COVID. And then got drafted into the women's league. Number one overall. Will she be playing in this match on Saturday? Because I'm a huge fan. Because she's a kook.
I'd like to see Columbus Crew youth product Rose Lavelle, you know, there.
Absolutely. That too. But it's intriguing that Dennis Rodman's daughter is on the U.S. national
team. And I think that's one of those where –
And Dennis Rodman, I got my problems with that guy, but, you know, let's not voice that on his kids.
But no, I think this is one of those where you absolutely give someone like that a run out because you're playing Uzbekistan. All due respect, and I know they're going to give it their all, but on paper, this game should be like 7-0.
Yeah, I would think. Well, we'll see. We're not going to make our picks for that game. I think we all know how it's going to go down. Tickets still available at lower.com. Are you going, Bart? If there's a game you're going to go to, it's
going to
be this one.
I'm going to talk to the better half and see if we can't can't coerce that, especially if that crew game's going the direction that I think it's going to be going.
That is the problem. We haven't talked about that. They're at the same time, which is
a big
issue between.
I don't know how they screwed that one
up. Yeah, I mean,
yeah, that's a pretty big screw.
I don't imagine that the crew had much say in the timing. I don't know how this all works, but yeah, it would have been nice, you know, to have one. I mean, the crew game I think is like a mid afternoon. It's like a,
I thought it was like a
6 p.m.
6 o'clock.
Okay,
yeah.
So you know, maybe if you could have done the women's game earlier, or if MLS would have moved that up. You know, you don't want to do it on Sunday because I think they play again on Tuesday.
Especially, you do it earlier, so I don't know, maybe some people in Uzbekistan would be able to watch it. Like, I mean,
are you sure they want to watch that?
I'm not saying they necessarily, but I'd like to give them the option. I mean, it's going to be, what, at like midnight?
Real quick, Crew 2 underway. 1 a.m.? Murph, I feel like you know something about this.
Yeah, we talked last week about the loss to Miami. They got their first win, 1-0, this weekend. So, it's
against who?
They want
the Bridgeview Fire 2.
Oh, yes, it was
a
Fire.
The Bridgeview Fire 2.
Where are they?
It's the Chicago
in Bridgeview.
Fire.
Oh.
They don't actually play there anymore. So.
No. The Fire 2 plays in Bridgeview. Yes.
Are you sure?
That's what the thing said.
I thought they tore the stadium down. No,
they didn't.
I thought they were making it.
They
like
sold
a
it. They sold it to the village.
But
it still has seats.
Well, I wouldn't. But did you also see that on the MLS Next? Because what it's called MLS Next, right?
MLS
That's
Next
the league.
Pro.
Yeah, you saw that they had Cincinnati too played a game in Cincinnati, Kentucky. You guys saw that, right? They literally put Cincinnati, Kentucky. And it's just like you're making my jokes for me. I love it.
Cincinnati, Kentucky. All right, we got to wrap this up. I think we covered literally everything. I think we did. I'm very excited. I'm torn like you. The World Cup in Qatar has been a humanitarian disaster, and that that hurts my heart. So I don't even it's hard. But at the same time, I love the World Cup so much, and goddamn FIFA for making us, the people that love the game and love people, we're the ones that have to, like, no.
We feel, like, culpable for their sports washing, and that's, I mean, it's the same thing I feel as a Newcastle fan.
It's wrong. It's wrong. But I guess it is what it is. Mm-hmm. Well, we got to get out of here. How was your beer, Bart?
The pain is gone.
All right.
The pain is gone.
That's what it's called. We're at Saucy Brew Works every Monday or sometimes Tuesday doing the Massport podcast, talking about all things crew. Thank you, Sam. Thank you, Murph.
Yep.
Thank you, Bart. My name's Ryan. Listen to my radio station, CD92.9. I would appreciate it. Like and subscribe to the Massport podcast. We'll talk to you next week.